Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. If you're new here, welcome to the podcast for the very first time. I'm glad you decided to come in and listen and join in. First of all, right off the top, if you're in any type of danger in a domestic violence relationship, do not listen to this podcast. Hang up, get a safety plan in order, get to your local services, places that can help get you some shelter. Dial 911, get some police officer assistance, but do not listen to the podcast in order to, I understand that you want to listen in, but don't do it if you're in danger. So the other thing is I'm going to give some information out, and that's to the National Domestic Violence Hotline number. And that number is 1-800-799-7233. Again, that number is 1-800-799-7233. The National Domestic Violence Hotline number, they are a very good resource for assistance. However, if they're busy and you cannot get through, you can also go on domesticshelters.org. That is a social media site that has all types of information about DV shelters, where your local shelters are, where your local organizations are that helps with domestic violence services. Also, you have a hotline number in your state. So in any state that you're in, you can look up that hotline number. Look up your local crisis line numbers as well. Those are very useful, very helpful if you're in a situation and you're needing to get out. You need some assistance with legal help. Anything that you need, they can get you to where you need to be. So today I have a special guest, and her name is Catherine. And I'm not going to mess her last name up. So I will let Miss Catherine introduce herself and give y'all a rundown of who she is and what she does. If we have permission to record, Catherine, I'm going to let you introduce yourself.
Yes, ma'am. And thank you. Thank you so much, Misty. I'm super excited to be a part of this. And for everyone out there, my name is Catherine Polsonelli. I do go by Cat, though. That's what a lot of people know me by. My podcast has that in it, and everything, even in my business. So I am a domestic violence survivor. I was in it for 8 years, and I am now currently a CEO of a company I created called Agent Services Plus. One side of it focuses on business management, and the other side is actually for my growth and personal development. And I'm also a real estate agent as well in the state of Tennessee.
Lovely, lovely. So, with all that being said, you said you had been a survivor you'd been out of it. Well, you survived it for 8 years. And so how long have you been out?
I have been out almost 10 years. So oh, wow. 8 or 9 years I've been out of the situation.
So when you got out of that situation, what are some things that you did? Did you reach out to your local services, or did you just come out and was able to maybe stay with someone, or what exactly mm-hmm. happened during that time?
So well, first off, I'm very stubborn. So I thought I could, fix it, which is one of the reasons why I stayed as long as I did. I was very blessed at the time. I worked in a small medical facility, and there was a gentleman there that was actually part of the court system and worked in the domestic violence area. I was not aware of that, but I became really good friends with him. And so after an incident that kind of drew the last straw, I had a conversation with him, and he actually is the reason why I made the call. So he gave me an ultimatum, and that was, you've told me what happened, so either you contact the police or I have to do it for you because of the way I'm involved. So I did reach out to the police, who then got me in touch with a local domestic violence center that's in our hub around here, and I was immediately taken over there and introduced to a couple of the advocates. But to be honest, I never thought about reaching out to anyone prior to. It was just kind of a daily struggle of getting through that day, surviving mm-hmm. that day to get to the next day and figure out the plan as you go on. I had two young kids at that time as well. So those resources, to be honest, I wasn't even completely aware of until I made the move.
Right, right. So when you did make the move, let me ask you to the advocates, How did they help you with the process? How were they able to help you get through the process in order to completely get out?
Yeah, so they were really fantastic. I had a couple different options. There was a shelter that was there. I was lucky enough to be able to move back in with family for a little bit of time during that situation. But they walked me through the entire process, really helped to kind of keep me calm. It was really nice to have people that, to be honest, most of the women that I dealt with had been in situations similar. So I didn't really feel as alone or embarrassed to tell anyone that I had been a part of it, because they were very open with their stories. And they were really quick to get into action, to get me out of that situation, make sure that my children were safe, because I actually had one that was in school at that time. And I knew that my ex was going to be going to pick him out. And so they shut that down really quick. So they were really fantastic at like allowing me to just kind of know what was going on, but take care of it for me as long as I gave permission. Because once I made that decision, I was in kind of such a shock that this was actually happening, that it was really hard to like navigate where to go from one step to the next.
So did you have to file a protection order against him?
I did. We immediately set an order of protection in place that day to protect my children. So that was the first thing that was done. And then in the state of Tennessee, you have to go back into court to process a restraining order later down the road. So it's a whole process when it comes to the legal side. And I understand it from their perspective because of how many calls and things that they do get in the unfortunate event that most people end up going back to that person. So that was a little stressful, but yeah, I did have that taken care of that day.
That's good. That's really good. So were your advocates there present during your hearing?
Oh, yes. Yes. There was always one or two of them that was there. Anytime that I had certain things I was required to go through, they were really great at kind of holding my hand through the process. They had some on-site counselors as well that I was welcome to talk to for free, to kind of just, you know, get some of it off your chest, and start dealing with the process. And that was really unique to have as well. Again, especially knowing that most of the people that you're dealing with in those centers, at least from my, from what I saw, they had all been in similar situations, and that was why they were now a part of this.
So let me ask you another question. So as a survivor, have you ever felt the need to be an advocate yourself? Do you advocate?
So I have thought about it for years. I have to say that the first priority was my kids and kind of getting them set straight. When I left my abuser, my kids were almost 8 and 10 at the time. And so that was it was a really huge struggle for them. So my first priority was with them. Since then, now that I'm in a safe space, I've learned how to deal with a lot of things that I've been through. The emotions are a lot different than they were at that point in time. I have started reaching out to other people. I do actually plan on writing a book about the first years of coming out of abuse and how to deal with that and ways that you can get through it on your own, even if you don't feel like you have a support system. And it's something that I wish that I would have had more of, and to help people get an understanding so that they don't feel like they're alone or that they're crazy for the thoughts that are going through their head.
Right. So as many advocates, you know, even myself, I mean, there's a lot of survivors that I do meet that they don't really necessarily have that drive. You know what I mean? Like they want to help and they want to be a part of advocacy, you know, and be advocate for different things. However, it's just not something that I think that they desire to want to do. But then you have some like, here I am myself. But you know, I was out of mind for well over 20 years whenever I decided, hey, you know, actually probably less than that, but I wasn't ready to make that transition to being a full-blown advocate. Like it was in my soul to want to do it, I think, but then, you know, it just wasn't the right time. Because I was still going through the motions and I was still trying to heal. And if you're not completely healed, you know, I say if you're not to the point to where you can at least deal and listen to other women's stories, you know, and, mm-hmm. And you're not able to process that because of the trauma that you dealt with, then it's not always the best thing for you to do, you know,
yeah.
Because you will eventually put your pain back onto someone else or your anger. Because a lot mm-hmm. of times pain comes out as anger. So, you know, because everyone processes trauma differently and we all heal in different moments of our lives. And some of us have to make that journey for the rest of our lives. I mean, even I, as an advocate, I mean, I have to do self-care. There's still that, you know, I have to self-care a lot. I have to, mm-hmm. you know, shut down and take care of myself and set boundaries and do all of these things. Do you do a lot of self-care yourself?
I do. And it's not something I learned until, honestly, about 4.5 years after I got out of the situation. So the first few years were kind of a blur. One of the things that a lot of people do in the midst of dealing with trauma is they don't want to deal with it. It's too much for those emotions and everything to continue to come back up. So we stuff it in a box. Mm. And from that, what happens is we make ourselves busy. So whether that's with your kids, with your job, with anything, you're constantly looking for things to do. And then if you do have downtime, you're either zoning out on TV or you're on the phone with somebody talking about drama or whatever you can, anything you can do to not have to be with yourself. And I did that for a really long time where I was so exhausted from helping everyone else, but I thought that's what I should be doing. And what I realized was it was because I was afraid to be with myself and sit with those thoughts and emotions mm-hmm. and allow them to process so that I could actually get over it. So I do practice it now. My husband is fantastic. My kids are now teenagers. They're 18 and 15. I've taught them how to deal with their emotions and things as well. So if we have a disagreement, it's very easy for someone to say, hey, I can't handle this right now, and step away. And I allow that space, and my family allows that space with me.
That's beautiful. I love that so much. So much, you know, because, you know, we tend to, like what you just said, I totally agree with that. You pour everything into other people to try to keep from being with yourself. I love that so much when you said that, because I did that when I was in my younger 30s and in my late 20s. So everyone was invited in Misty's house. You know, I mean, yeah, I was always like, oh, the door's open. Yeah, sure. You can stay in a room. So, yeah. and not realizing, you know, where was the boundaries? Like, I had none. I had no boundaries. I didn't really realize, hey, listen, you know, this is not about you need to stop taking care of everyone around you because you're neglecting your own self,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that was a big lesson for me. You know, and I didn't start learning that until I was later on in maybe in my mid 30s, possibly mm-hmm. almost even closer to my 40s. So, you know,
yeah.
So survivors, I've noticed this about us. We tend to want to take care of other people a whole lot.
So, yes. Yeah. And it's funny that you say that, because I was actually just on a podcast the other day mm-hmm. and we were talking about mindset and things along this line. And he said, what's interesting that he had noticed is anyone that's been through any type of trauma, then we want to help other people. And the reason, he said, a lot of the times why we want to is because we know what it feels like to mm-hmm. not have someone there for us. And so therefore we want to nurture others to give them that peace and that support, because at one point in time in our life, we did not have it ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. So see, my circle is so small now, because I do set a lot of boundaries and probably walls sometimes up against other people, that when I do have like a really good friend do something very kind for me, like my birthday was last week and I had a really sweet friend and she sent me a $25 Starbucks card because she knows I love coffee.
Oh.
And I was just like blown away. I mean, it was like I had hit the lotto, you know, mm-hmm. because I'm not used to that type of love. Like, I'm not used to someone doing things for me, because I'm always used to doing for others. So whenever I did finally have someone do something kind and sweet for me, I almost felt like I was just so humbled, you know, and even like, you know, I've had this conversation with a few of my friends, and I don't know how you feel. I won an award just here recently in September, and I've won, you know, won one for the podcast and stuff like that. And I've just felt so overwhelmed by it. Almost like I was thankful and grateful, don't get me wrong. And I felt very blessed, but it was almost like I could not accept my accomplishment.
Yeah.
You know, like it wasn't even real.
Yeah. And I think that's because we've broken ourselves down in different compartments, and we've been in such a survivor mode from those relationships or whatever that trauma may be, that it's very hard for us to accept that we could do something good, that we could accomplish something and have that sense of pride and confidence in ourselves. Because when you've been through any type of abuse or trauma like that, you lose that part of yourself. You lose that confidence, and you lose that appreciation for what you are good at. And a lot of times that's because it's been, you know, taken out of us from that other person. And it's very hard. Even I sometimes, I have amazing people that I'm surrounded with that are always wanting to help and do things. And it's still hard for me sometimes to accept that because I'm not used to people helping, because I was in such a situation where that was not there for so long. So it's kind of like there's a part of your brain that has accepted that it's not safe to accept other people's help because it's never been there. And so you almost have to reprogram your brain and how it thinks to allow those thoughts to be okay. So you almost have to, like, it's like walking your brain through the process of being a child and teaching it how to be a grown up and tell it that this is okay and these are the reasons why, and then give it the evidence to show what can come from it and what good can happen so that it will release that feeling and allow you to grow in that sense.
You know, and I love that. And that's exactly why I wanted to talk to you on this podcast, because you are so in tune with mindset. And mindset, there's a lot about mindset. And sometimes you do have to get into a place to where you can have the positive mindset and the right mindset to overcome certain things in your life. You know, and so that's why I am so proud you come on the podcast, because I wanted people to hear your wisdom. I just think you're so brilliant with all of the things that you do. But, you know, it took us, what, 2 or 3 months to get you here? And listen, my friend Laura Mosley would probably tell you the same thing. It took her like at least about 3 or 4 months to actually get here on the podcast. And so now she's like a 2-time, you know, person on the podcast. So once you get here, honey, the door will be open. So, but yeah. So what are some things that, like, maybe some advice you could give to someone, like, say for instance, they're listening right now and they're like, you know, I want to have a takeaway from maybe Catherine's story, because we really haven't touched much on your story. And I told you before we started, you know, you don't have to tell us certain things, you know, and if you don't want to, because I mean, I know that you've overcame a lot and you're thriving, you know. And once you get into that thriving part of your life, you know, it's hard sometimes to revisit the old part of it, because it's so very much behind you. But what are some things that, say, a victim of DV or someone who's newly surviving, some of the takeaways that they could get from you?
Yeah, definitely. So the first one would be okay with telling your story. And the reason that I say that is because if we stay in a place where we're just like, oh, well, it's behind me, right? I don't want to deal with it. It's not a part of me. It still lingers there. So those thoughts, those feelings, the stuff that you went through still lingers there. So a big thing for me, and it was very hard, and it still is hard when I talk about certain instances, but the biggest thing for me was to tell my story. So whether that's telling my husband or writing it down for the parts that I don't necessarily want to tell everyone. And the reason being is because what it does is when you do that, and make sure that you have a safe space and you have at least, you know, 30 minutes, you have an hour to really process through this, because a lot is going to come up. But it gives you a chance to actually process through it. And then what happens is, which is really interesting, is you actually build a piece of confidence that you were missing, because then what you are telling to people becomes exactly what it is. And that is just a story. It's something that happened in the past, and there's no emotion and there's no feelings that are tied to it. If you notice in the beginning, for anyone that's telling their story or talks about it or goes into any type of detail, it's very hard, right? We relive those feelings. We relive those emotions, and it's almost like we're back in that exact moment at that time. And it's very hard to get through that. When you're in a safe space and you're able to feel that, actually leaning into those feelings and giving yourself that space to, let's say, cry, right? It's okay. It doesn't mean anything's wrong. It doesn't mean that that person has power over you. What it means is you may not have been in a safe space when that item happened, and therefore you've not processed those emotions. And so it's very important to process those emotions. I'll give you a prime example. Through all the things that I've been through, and a lot of mine was more mental and emotional abuse than absolutely anything. And even my therapist told me when I went to see one that I had been completely brainwashed. So I essentially lost my identity in being with the person that I was with at that time. And I took on the identity of whatever they told me that I was. So to give you an example, I'm still in that situation. My youngest one still visits him, and it's gotten to the point where he's now becoming emotionally abusive to my son. And so I put a stop to that. I told him he did not have to go over there. We had a very long conversation. I made sure that it was my son's decision, and I was not influencing that. That was a huge part for me. And he's realized the things that his father is doing to him that he doesn't agree with. And I told him that that's okay if he doesn't want to be a part of that. But in the midst of all of that, my body immediately went back to the day that I had him arrested. And it immediately went back to all of the things that were still done to me and the things that he continued to try to do to me after I had him arrested. I had him arrested for stalking, because he would show up at the bottom of my driveway in the middle of the night, almost every single night, with a mask and a hat on so that nobody knew who it was, but I did, and just stand at the bottom of my driveway. So those emotions came back up like a flood. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had dealt with a lot of them. And so what I did was, is I told my husband about it, and I told him that, you know, I don't think things are going to be the same, because I'm not in that same situation. And that's something that I declared for myself, that it's not going to happen that way. But there were a lot of emotions that came up with that. And so there was one evening that I got in the shower and I lost it. Like, I just started crying out of nowhere. And I was like, what is going on? And then I realized, I'm like, okay, it's because I didn't deal with these things, because I had to be strong for my family and I had to be strong for my children at that time, right? So I didn't have time to process those emotions. And so I stayed in the shower for an extra 15 minutes. I had a good cry. I knew what it was. I told myself it was okay. I reminded myself that I'm in a safe space, that he can't hurt me, and that this is just a part of it. And then I was fine. And when I got out, my husband asked me if I was okay. And so I kind of explained to him and I told him what happened. I was like, it's fine. I said, I understand that it's emotions that I have to still deal with and process. Mm-hmm. And so he was just there for me. And if I wanted to talk about it, I could. And if I didn't, I didn't have to. And that was that. So it's very, very important to make that space for yourself, to allow yourself to process that. That was a very hard thing for me. So if anyone takes anything away, that was probably the hardest thing for me in the beginning. I would catch myself crying on the way home from work. A song would catch me and it would just bring back all these memories, and I would suck it up and wipe my face real quick, right? And I'd pick my kids up and I'd be fine. And I would go home and I would cry a little bit at night, and I'd be like, I can't cry. He still has control over me. I freaking hate him. This is his fault. And so I kept forcing those feelings back down. But what I realized was, it wasn't him, and he didn't have control over me. It was that my body had not had a chance to process all of the trauma that I had been through on a daily basis for that 8-year span.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I felt that just then. I felt every bit of what you just said. And so I call it triggers, you know, mm-hmm. that triggered you in such a way. And a lot of us survivors get so triggered over things that something might have happened per se in that abuse. And so then we find ourselves years later and something, you know, happens outside you know, maybe to a family member, maybe to a close one, or something happens, and then bam, we're back in that spot because it triggers us, and it triggers us, it triggers that old familiar, you know, abuse that we once went through. So we just fall apart at the seams, you know, sometimes, and it's okay to fall apart at the seams, because we got to pull ourselves back together. We got to be able to process those feelings, and learn to learn how to deal with that, you know, and learn that it's okay to be sad and be crying, or do what you got to do, you know. And I remember, you know, telling my husband, I had a triggering moment one time, and you know, my father got killed when I was just a baby, and so I still, I notice whenever I get triggered sometimes, or when I have in the past, that I have wanted to go to my dad's grave, you know, or I've wanted to talk about, you know, how lonely that I have felt growing up, not having my father here. And, you know, I know one day my husband, you know, he was just like, you know, well, you're just going to have to be strong. And I said, I don't have to be strong every day. You know, I mean, I know that I'm a strong woman. But there's sometimes that I don't always need to be strong. I should have those days. And that was a day that he was just like, okay, okay. What it was he was trying to fix me. He was trying his best to just say something, anything to for me to stop crying. You know what I mean? Because he didn't know how to process my emotions, because he was just like, oh gosh, well, what have I said and done? And then and then he understood where I was coming from. And then all he did was hug me. He was like, well, just come over here. Let me just hug you. And that made me better. Just his hug. Because I just wanted to fall apart for a second. You know, and so, you know, there's been moments like that in our relationship. He also went through trauma. So we are both, you know, two survivors who have navigated our ways through our marriage. And there's been some cries, and there's been some, you know, leave me alone, I don't want to talk to you moments. But at the end of the day, we've been together for 11 years. And so we come back together as survivors. We know, we know where our limitations are. We know when we're triggered, or when things are not going the way they were planned. But we have both matured mentally and physically, I feel like, with each other. As a couple, you know, and it's just, marriage is hard work anyway. So, but he's a wonderful person, and I would not give anything for him. I mean, at the end of the day, he's put up with a lot. So he's had to hear about domestic violence now since we've been together. You know, and I say, you know, he's my rock. He really is. He really is my rock. He's been here since I started rocking the podcast, since all the work that I do. I mean, he's there for me, you know, and he cried when I went and accepted that award, Mobile. He cried because he was so proud. It was just like a proud moment for him. Yeah. But this is not about me or my podcast here. So let me get back to you before I get back on me.
No, you're fine. And I would say too, that a lot of people, yes, definitely it's triggers. And I think, the biggest breakthrough for me with that was understanding that you're going to have triggers throughout your life. And some of them are just a lot more deep rooted than others. And that's okay. The biggest thing that I think we fault ourselves is we try to get rid of them. And so when we don't eliminate it completely, we feel like we failed. And that's the difference, is understanding that a trigger can still be there. I still have things that catch me off guard. The difference is I know how to handle it now. And I know what that feeling is. And I know how to bring myself back down a lot quicker and move through the motion versus getting lost in it like I used to.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. I'm so proud of you for everything you do. But we are at the 1 minute mark, so I'm going to let you do a quick shout out of where can people find you, real quick.
Yeah, sure. So you can find me anywhere online. I'll actually be underneath my business name, which is Agent Services Plus. So I'm on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. You can find me on my personal page if you can spell Pulcinelli. You'll see my stuff. Yeah. You can also find me on my podcast as well that actually just was released. It's called Real Chat with Kat. And it's more along the business lines. We do wrap in mindset and things like that. And if anyone is looking to connect, I always pay attention to my private messages and my DMs. Yeah. Like, please reach out to me. I'm more than happy to have conversations and help people on any level that I can.
Great. So guys, thank you for joining the podcast. We're done.